morning. Welcome into another episode of Big Talk, College Sports with a Midwest Perspective, Blue Collar and Blue Blood. I'm Dalton Shetler alongside my partner, Sam Sprunger. Sam, how are you feeling today?
Oh, it's the weekend, but again, I always revert back to that meme where the guy's just blankly staring and sitting in an empty swing, standing in an empty pool. I don't know what to do.
Well, the one thing I can say is if you are a college basketball fan and you're not really sure what to do without the games, the portal is busy enough to keep everybody busy at this point.
For sure. Jeez Louise. I'm looking at it and it's like the JCPenney catalog. If you're too young to remember the JCPenney catalog before.
I very faintly remember it.
Well, it was phasing its way out by the time you were ready to recognize it. And it used to be a 3 to 4 inch thick catalog. And it had everything that JCPenney offered. And the Christmas one had a toy section that was like a quarter to half inch thick. And it was heaven. You just flip through that and just see, I want that, and circle it. This is the adult version of the JCPenney Christmas catalog right here. Since we say this is our Christmas.
It's true. That's a good tie-in. I mean, as we talk right now, I believe in men's basketball, there's about 1,600 transfers in the portal.
Amazing.
I believe that's the number, which, by the way, is only going to grow. Players have until May 1st to submit their name to the transfer portal. And we still have another 11 days before we get to the end of April. So that number is going to go up. It could, some people believe, rise as high as 2,000 players in the transfer portal.
So I mean, they're saying in the next 11 days, it could go up by almost 400 more kids going into the portal. Goodness.
That's what a lot of the people who are more experts in the portal and like follow this as their kind of main gig, that's what they believe. They believe it could get to 2,000 players entering the transfer portal, and it is just absolute chaos. We've seen the Big Ten involved, whether it's departures or arrivals. So we're going to be talking about some of that. And the women's side isn't too far behind. I think the women were around 1,400, 1,500 players as well. Big changes happening over there in the Big Ten on the women's side as well. So let's go ahead and start by breaking down some of the things we've seen early on from the transfer portal and maybe where some teams stack up. On the men's side, I think you could say the most active teams at this point are Ohio State, Illinois. I'm sure I'm missing some. Indiana.
Those are probably the
three most active, I would say, at this point on the men's side. Who's maybe impressed you the most, Sam?
I would say, honestly, I would say I like what Illinois has done. They lost Danger, but they got, you know, they've got four others from Kerry Booth, Kylan Boswell from Arizona. Like, they've added pieces that are, you know, coming from programs that, Notre Dame's down a couple, you know, for a couple years, but they have a winning type of mentality.
And that's where Kerry Booth is from.
Yeah. Yeah. So, and adding Jake Davis from Marquette, I mean, they're doing a lot. Brad Underwood is showing himself to be somewhat of a portal guru. And because like last year, Terrence Shannon Jr. and Damask were both additions to that team, to a team that had already been established and developed from the portal. So like, or not all the way, but a good portion of it in the portal. So I think Brad Underwood's showing that he can really go through and get a really strong roster with his recruiting, but then also filling and supplementing his roster with what he can find in the portal.
And it ends up pretty well. I mean, as you mentioned, Kylan Cummins makes the transfer from Arizona to Champaign, Illinois, an Illinois native, and that guard had a big season this last year for the Wildcats. It's going to be interesting to see him there in Champaign. But you know what?
The amount of names, like the big names that enter this portal for what seems no apparent reason is kind of mind-boggling to me. Because you do see, and I'm sorry to cut you off, but like you see when coaches change and leave, you see somewhat of an exodus, but like there's some programs they've got the same coach, and all of a sudden there's like five people leaving. You know, Iowa lost three people from their team, including the coach's son.
Yep.
But so I don't understand, like, some of these big name players are leaving their program, and there's not a really, we're not on the inside, so we don't know what's going on, but there seems to be no rhyme or reason to why they're leaving.
I think there's a couple of different variables, and one that a lot of people will point to, and it is a real thing, is the NIL mark. Yeah, I mean, it's you. What can I get for my name, image, and likeness? Who's willing to pay me? And it's just become kind of an auction system through the portal for some.
And I saw the report an article, I want to say, just this morning while I was getting ready for the show. Bio committed to IU. He was demanding demanding $1.2 million. I get that, this is the NCAA's fault on this. When it comes to these players are just the highest bidder. It is a free agency is what it is.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know that that was what the intent behind NIL was.
No.
When it first came, it was to compensate these players who are being used in the NCAA's money-making scheme. So they get some sort of compensation for it. And now it's becoming a free agent who can give me, like you said, who can give me the highest amount of money.
When the NIL laws were introduced 4 years ago, I believe it was 4 years ago. You're right. Like, the spirit of it was, okay, I can sell a jersey with my name on it and get paid for having my name on a jersey. I can sign autographs. I can do a meet and greet and get paid for doing the event because I'm giving people my name, image, and likeness. It wasn't supposed to be pay for play, but without any kind of structure, policy, activity from the governing body of college athletics, it was going to come with it. And that's where we still sit 4 years later. I don't even know how you go backwards from here, but it immediately became pay for play because there was nothing to help guide and structure what the original spirit of it was, where it was just to get money off your name, image, and likeness, which every individual has the right to do so. And that part of it made absolute sense. But it becoming pay for play is really kind of the worst part of college athletics now at this point.
And let me be clear on this. I know I've heard a lot of people, and it's the older generation. That's not me knocking on older people, but the older generation. Well, these kids get a scholarship, free room and board, and their college is taken care of. That's all the pay they need. And I come back with, okay, if I am an engineer student with a full ride scholarship getting every single thing taken care of, am I restricted from going and making money in the engineering field? No, I am not. And that's why I think that I agree that there should be some sort of NIL in place to allow these kids to get money. Do I think there should be other things in place that prevent this? Absolutely. I even heard one idea was let them have 10% of what they get NIL wise and put the rest into the trust until they walk across the stage or leave the school.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe, but still, but that's not a horrible idea. But the point is the NCAA just went, oh, well, we're doing NIL. And turned around and walked away.
Yeah. Well, and that's the thing. Like, again, the money you get for doing jerseys, autographs, whatever, for your actual name, image, and likeness, like, I mean, that's your money now. Like, you're an individual adult, American citizen, just like everybody else. You know what I mean? Like,
there's the key right there, American citizen, because Zach Edey made this much money in American-made NIL money.
Right. Yeah. No, that's a whole nother ball of wax. But
that's legislation. That's not NCAA though.
Right. And my point just is like, for the NIL, like you at some point just have to be a responsible adult. Like, I mean, these, even though these are kids, they really are adults. Like,
according to law, they are adults. So they have to understand what they're dealing with, you know?
But again, like, there's a huge distinction between getting money for signing autographs, your own jerseys, being in a video game, whatever, versus, hey, what does it cost to have you come play for our team? I mean, that's pay for play, and that's what we see now. And that's not what this was ever supposed to be. But you brought up old school, Sam, and I want to go to a conversation we were texting back and forth recently. But and we'll get back into the portal. This kind of opens the door back for it. But we were talking about transfer portal activity, and we were having a bit of a broad discussion, maybe even debate over text.
Because I think we're on the opposite sides of it.
Yes.
Not in an argument, but we're just on the opposite sides of where we think it's going.
And I'd like to bring it to the audience, especially because in text, like, we can only and how busy we were, we couldn't fully get through the conversation. So let's present it to the audience. In talking about transfer portal and the amount of weight it carries in college athletics today, Sam, your belief is?
My firm belief is that the rosters that are filled with only portal players are going to struggle to win national titles. And it's the Brad Underwood thing from 2 years ago when he had this team, this great team of basically all wings, but they were doing very, very well. They were a very talented team, but he made the comment of in the Big Ten tournament, we just got to gel. This is after the season's almost 95% of the way done. He's saying we still need to gel. I think that's going to present it. Now, don't get me wrong. I think there are teams that will gel quicker, but I just don't know that those teams like, Oakland, they have very, very veteran teams. I'm not going to say old because old is relative, but veteran teams to where they know each other. They've gelled many years over, and they play a team like Kentucky who's filled with either – Kentucky was filled with freshmen. They're not transfer guys, but it's kind of the same concept to where they don't have the gelling factor there yet, and they don't have the, oh, I know where he's going to cut just because I played with him so much. That's my thought process as to I don't see a portal team, because if you look at the two teams that were in the national championship game this year, there was two players that didn't start with the teams that they were playing on at the time. Those are teams that are rooted in those guys committed to Purdue and UConn, and the others were just pieces. Alabama, they had one guy that started at Alabama. No, he made it. They made it to the Final Four, but they didn't win a national title, is what I'm getting at.
Well, and I guess what I would say in a couple of these instances is, like, Oakland, Jack Golke was a transfer. Mm-hmm. Rocket Watts was a transfer. Like, they had transfers that came there. But I think collectively, like, when you take a look at where the transfer portal is, and I still feel like we're in the early stages of the portal era, where it's this sizable, I believe maybe to your point, you can't have a team fully constructed of transfer portal players, but I believe you have to dip your toe in it, because we also had the conversation. Yeah. I mean, you brought up Kentucky, and we talked about in text that you compared this to the one and done era, the transfer portal era to the one and done era.
Not an apples to apples comparison, but loosely enough that I think it's kind of similar to me.
See, this is where I disagree. I think this is completely apples to oranges, because with the transfer portal era, which we did see two teams win a title in the one and done days, not transfer portal era, but we saw Kentucky win it in 12. We saw Duke win it in 15. Yep. But how many one and done players were there truly a year per class, would you say?
For them?
I imagine, just period, like in college basketball, how many true one-and-done players were there?
Yeah, see, that number is extremely low comparatively, yeah.
Yeah, like that's like 15 players maybe?
Yeah, maybe 20, maybe 20.
Yeah, like we're talking like 0.2% of college basketball, mm-hmm. where today with transfer portal, we're talking about maybe 2,000 players getting into the portal. That's 40% of college basketball. I mean, it's become so sizable that at this point you can't simply just ignore it. And the other thing is too, I mean, the thing we constantly talked about with the one and done teams and their flaws was experience. You're right. They may not be completely connected over years and years, but there is something to having played the game for 4 years and still having experience. So I think this is more apples to oranges. And I think the portal you're actually set up to win better than the one and done days were, for those teams about a decade ago.
I guess my biggest, my thought of them being not an apples to apples, but very similar in the aspect of every year you've got certain amount of new players coming into your roster and resetting it every year.
Yep.
That's what my thought process is. It's not the, well, this guy's played 2 years in college already. This guy's coming from the prom, you know, yep. That part I'm not even thinking about. It's they're coming into a roster, both to a brand new roster, and they've got to figure it out, you know, yep. And that's my thought process. And I'm not saying that there aren't exceptions to the rule, meaning yep. the one and dones that will win a national title because they're just that good. They're that able to gel quickly and to do that. And the I'm not saying that, and well, I'm getting to that. I'm not saying that the portal won't produce some national champions where there are 3 to 4 of those players on the team that didn't even start with the team. Yep. But I just think that I say the rule, but you get what I'm saying. The rule is going to be that the more people you have starting on your roster at the beginning of the career are going to make you more of a viable and probably more likely to win a national title. And I'm not saying that that's not going to ever happen, because like I said, there's exceptions to every rule. But like Purdue, you didn't make the Final Four if you don't have Lance Jones on the team.
Correct.
You don't make it. You don't. He was that extra added piece that absolutely set forth the ability for them to get to Phoenix. It's essentially the same roster than the year before, with maybe a couple added freshmen, and that team got beat in the first round. You add Lance Jones, who's a starter then, and boom, you go to the Final Four.
Yep. No, and I'm totally with you. I don't necessarily think that you have to go into the portal for 10 guys and completely right. reshape your roster.
But you're not every year doing what Brad Underwood's doing, adding 3 to 4 guys.
Well, honestly, though, I think 3 to 4, that may be part of the – again, 40% of college basketball
right.
is in the portal. Like, that's 2 out of every 5 players on the starting 5. That's 4 to 5 players off of every single roster in college basketball. Like, the numbers say it's about that large, where if you add in 3 guys per year, that would check out. That would almost be conservative.
I'm just wondering where the room for their freshmen, incoming freshmen, are. That's when they add that many people into their roster from the portal. Is there room for their freshmen? Like right now, I know Purdue's not going after anybody in the portal, at least that to my knowledge, because they still have one extra scholarship player on their team. So they've either got to have somebody say, I'll become a walk-on, or they have to transfer out in order for the freshman class that Matt Painter's got to come in and have everybody be scholarshiped.
I actually hadn't looked at the Purdue scholarship situation. That's true, even with the players leaving, like Edie yes. and Morton. And
they still have one more player that they've got to either have hit the portal or have them go to walk on.
Wow, that's crazy.
And the possibility, I think, of somebody giving up their scholarship is probably closer to than going to the portal, because I think Caleb First is he's a pre-med guy, which Purdue is very good at, what you know, in the college work that he does, and his brother's there. So there's I wouldn't be shocked if you see Caleb First turn into a walk-on, because he can still get NIL money in West Lafayette. So he can still get NIL money, and he can pay for his college with scholarships of the educational variety, not the sports variety, and still is able to maybe contribute to the team, and all 6 of those freshmen can come in with a scholarship. I'm not saying I haven't heard any of that. I have no reason to think it other than I thought of it right here.
2024 college athletics economics, though. I mean, that's right. That's how you beat the system nowadays. But I mean, to Illinois' point, I haven't, I guess, looked at their scholarship chart either. But you figure with Sincere Gray, Dane Danger transferring out, that probably opens up spots, unless they were already overfilled to begin with before right. those two left. And they were heavily after a couple of other transfers, so I still think they're on the market looking for a couple more guys. But I mean, we talked about the Arizona guard, and really this will land us back into the Big Ten conversation of some of the movers and shakers we've seen so far. You were starting to move to Indiana, so let's go ahead and shift to Bloomington and what they've been able to do early on.
Well, really quickly, I'm going to go to the Purdue fan in me. I'm sure okay. glad they can spend their money and get the best players they can buy. Like I said, Balo demanded $1.2 million, and I know Miles Rice wasn't far. You know, I mean, I'm sure.
We haven't seen reports if they actually paid that. I doubt they actually paid that much, but I do believe players are asking for that much when they hit the market.
It's probably close, though, because he had many other schools that probably were like, we'll give you 1.2 if you're not coming to, you know, but they are adding some pieces that you and I kind of talked about. Don't make 100% sense.
Real quick, if I can pause you, I just want to throw this out there because, again, we don't know exactly some of the dollars that are thrown out there, but I do want to follow, if we can, like the AJ Store path where he transferred from Wisconsin. The report early on was that the asking price was $1 million for AJ Store. And then a couple weeks ago, Jeff Goodman had tweeted a report that basically it boiled down to AJ Store in Kansas. Kansas offered him $750,000, said take it or leave it. And AJ left it because that was the discussion that happened earlier on. And then it swung
so that was a conversation
around.
That already happened.
Because I had read that tweet a couple of weeks ago. So according to the reporting of Jeff Goodman and what he put there, and then eventually it ends up where he goes back to Kansas. So who knows where the dollars actually shook out. But that kind of shows you through like people reporting and trying to follow along with AJ Store that the asking price reportedly sent out there. And this one, I don't know if it was tweeted by Jeff Goodman or who did. So I don't want to attribute it to anybody, but the asking price was $1 million. Then there was a report that he talked with Kansas and the deal was $750K. He left it and then ended up going back to Kansas regardless. So it's when you follow these dollar amounts, like Umar Balo asking for 1.2 mil, who knows where this really ended up? Like we're seeing a lot of them maybe asking prices reportedly, but that's just something to keep in mind as we go through. But continue, Sam.
Well, and it, like you and I were talking about, you know, IU is some of these selections they're just not they don't make 100% sense because they've Balo, he's a big guy. Now they have three guys that are big guys on their roster, and they're and what is it, Mbako? That came from Oregon, correct? Then you have Balo.
No, that was Khalil Ware. And Ware's
that's right. I'm sorry. Ware went to. That's right. Mbako. Then you have Balo. And you have Renew. That's a lot of people you've got to find playing time for.
You know, and Mike Woodson said this last season. He believes college basketball still played inside out. And damn it, is he going to prove it?
Well, is he going to play all three at the same time? I mean, like, is he that gutsy?
Well, I think with that much talent in the front court, I think they have to go Twin Towers lineup. Like,
at least twin, yeah.
Like, well, you have to play two of them at the same time.
And there are a few teams that can combat that. Not many, but a few that can combat that. So if that's his aim and they're successful at it, then good for him. But I just don't know. The one thing that I've always kind of said is, you know, just because you see all these transfers coming in doesn't automatically, it puts them in the avenue to be good. That doesn't automatically make them good.
Right.
You know, you can't say, well, now they're the shoe-in for the Big Ten. No, they've still got, again, you've got the gel factor. You've got they can go in, if they've committed and enrolled, they can go work with each other. But that's not the same as going into a practice, you know, full fledged, and then getting into games. You know, it takes a while, and so good luck to IU. I've said this, and I completely and 100% mean it. College basketball and the Big Ten Conference are better when IU's competitive.
Yeah,
I am a Purdue fan, and I can acknowledge that. It doesn't mean I want them to be great. I certainly don't want them to beat Purdue. But it, when your blue bloods are good and competitive, it's a better game. And I still consider IU a blue blood, even though it's been, 30, almost 40 years since they won their last national championship. That's fine.
87, yeah.
But they still are a blue blood in the aspect of they have a history. They have gravitas, whatever you want to call it. You know, they've got mm-hmm. that. They've lost some of the swagger they've used to have, but they still have that where IU, you know? Mm-hmm. And so I don't know if this will work, but good luck. And well, I saw reports that maybe Connor Sejan may be committing to IU as well.
I had seen a report of him visiting, which that part interests me, because then you're adding a shooter. I mean, look, you can believe the game is played inside out despite all the different numbers at this point that show you how many teams take the three. Again, 10 years ago was the Steph Curry, Klay Thompson, Splash Brothers thing where they went 73-9. Like, I mean, that was a decade ago that basketball changed.
Insane, isn't it?
How yeah. quick
time flies.
Uh-huh. But still, like, if you believe the game's played inside out, the only things I would say is, A, at this point, because this has been a long-term problem now at Indiana, you have got to have some kind of shooter. They have not yeah. really had shooters. Galloway's been the best shooter, and not that Galloway's a problem. It's also, like, one. Like, they don't have – and
they
you
have,
could go around
Indiana
shooter. – Walk into any YMCA to an above senior league and you'll watch 65-year-olds stroke it from three-point range. Like, you could walk right into a shooter anywhere in the state. And the fact that they
bump into
them
left and
shooters,
right.
Yeah. The fact that they haven't had shooters is just bewildering to me. But also, I mean, you take a look at Indiana, and my thing is, with all that talent down low, how is it going to create shots on the perimeter if you're not going to get one of those kind of guys? Because, look, Sam, my point, I suppose, is use this last year's national championship game as a point of reference. Purdue's a great team. Great team that, mm-hmm. that they had this last year. But when it came down to it in that championship game against UConn, and this isn't to damn Purdue – because
no,
UConn
no,
was an amazing team, but they could not create shots on the perimeter. And so Purdue played that game 100% inside out.
Yep.
Not that there's a problem with that, but when you were down eight and you needed some shots, nobody could get it to you. You had to keep going inside, and there just was no way to ever catch up in that spot. And Indiana is now basically kind of following that same game plan of, hey, look, we just can't fall behind by a certain
yeah.
amount. We don't have guys who can create shots on the perimeter unless they still are working. I mean, they did bring in Rice, but I mean, that's a nice backcourt player, but you have got to get some shooting. I'm curious to see if they end up landing a Sejan or if they land some other shooters.
Well, and what UConn did was made Purdue one dimensional. Mm-hmm. They were giving them the one dimension. And I've talked about this on Sam's big blog is Purdue was one of the best three-point shooting teams in the country. That's
yep.
including with Zach Edey. They still were one of the, I think they were number two in three-point shooting percentage in the country. And UConn was able to turn them into a one-dimensional post-only team during the national championship.
And not to cut you off, Sam, but Purdue
no.
got those three-pointers throughout the season simply because teams doubled Edey and he kicked out. Like, there's yeah. nothing else there that allowed for perimeter shots. Not that that's mm-hmm. necessarily a problem because Edey drew that much attention, but he ran into the one other big that could actually fend for
take himself.
Take him one-on-one
and still get
yeah.
eaten alive, but still be able to allow the other four to stay home. Because
yes.
that's what I was getting ready to say is Klingon, if he was 6'10", they would have had to double.
Correct.
They would have had to, because
yep.
they would have just kept feeding it into Edey, and Edey would have scored 60 points in that national championship game
yep.
because he had 6 inches on him. But now when Klingon's 7'2", he's still getting eaten up, or whoever they put him still getting eaten up, but that allowed the other four to stay home on the perimeter. And so but that's what we're looking at with IU is if they don't
yep.
get some shooters. If you've got a team that can shut you down in the post, and I'm going to go to this team, they've got Trey Kaufman Wren and Will Berg, and they've got another 7-footer. The name escapes me. They'll have the Twin Towers that they can go out there and play with IU. And they still have the shooters to some extent, plus the freshmen that are coming in. They still have the shooters that can beat them, that can beat IU. You know,
yeah.
so that's you know, they've got
and,
to
if,
be.
And by the way, if you have shooters, it helps decongest things.
Sure, it does, because like, it requires you to put the guy on the perimeter.
Yeah, it can let your big dogs eat down low. So I don't know. That's my big thing. I'm just curious to see if they get a shooter, because that would do wonders to mm-hmm. the offense. Without a shooter, boy, it just feels like might be a bit constipated again inside. And yeah. they've had great players, Indiana has. If you go back through recent times with Trayce Jackson-Davis, Khalil Ware, like they've had great players and have not been able to translate it to winning. And it feels like a big part of the reason is because there's no shooting support on their yeah. perimeter to either take defensive attention away from the big talented players inside or whatever. Like, it just feels like it's a very simple problem. Just mm-hmm. get a shooter. Like, I don't know yeah. how really to, I don't mean to make it so crass as that. But
you either need to recruit or get one from the portal. You have to, yeah. because if not, you're going to have another disappointing season where your fans are going, what in the hell are you doing?
Yeah.
Because we've seen that the last year with IU, they were ready to ride him out on a pine rail.
Right.
And they didn't, you know, IU kept him, and now he's making splashes in the portal, which is great. That's great.
Yep.
But you need to show the results on the court, or you're going to be right back in this same boat next year, trying to buy new players, and, or you don't have a job. One of the two.
And I like Mbako. I like Ballo. I like Renew. I like all of it. I just think you need to add in a very critical piece to mm-hmm. make this recipe work. And maybe he will. Like, I'm not trying to judge or condemn or whatever. I just, right. I think this team is still that piece away from actually being successful at the high level of the Big Ten.
I still think they're a couple of pieces away, but yeah, the biggest piece is they've got to get another shooter. They have to.
Yep. If we take a look at Ohio State, shift over to there real quick.
Let me
the Buckeyes also have been pretty active in the portal. Yeah. They lost Zed Key. Zed Key transferred in state to Dayton. Scotty Middleton has transferred out. Roddy Gale transferred out. That was a big one in the backcourt. But coming in for Ohio State, Michi Johnson returns to Columbus. He started at Ohio State, transferred to South Carolina, now is back. And they also picked up a former five-star center in Aaron Bradshaw, who played last year at Kentucky, and mm-hmm. he makes his way to Ohio State. So Jake Diebler, early on in the first year, starting to work pretty quickly in the portal and pick up some pretty talented players.
Yeah, he's got he's losing three, but you know that with coaching changes, like I said, you always kind of expect, especially in the world of the transfer portal like this, they're leaving as soon as it's announced that they've got a new coach, or yeah. that they're leaving, that the one coach is leaving. Most of the time they'll stick around to see who the replacement is, just to see if they fit in with them. But I don't know, you know, these three that left, you know, for whatever reason, they didn't want to stay with the Jake Diebler experiment, I guess, maybe, I don't know. You know, bringing in Michi Johnson, who knows the lay of the land in Columbus. So like, he's familiar, and he probably knows Jake Diebler because Diebler's been on the coaching staff. So he's familiar with him. And Bradshaw, that name caught me because he, like, his grade on 24/7 sports is a 95. Mm-hmm. Like, he's a solid player. And for him to go to Ohio State, that puts them in a pretty good position to be a pretty competitive team next year.
No, I completely agree. As we sit here, we talk about those three teams that have made quite a bit of moves. Is there anybody else who's caught your eye in the portal early on?
You know, I don't like how cumbersome 24/7's ability to switch is. Maryland took a hit. They lost, what is it? Or actually, they've lost three people, but they've gained three people. I don't know any of the people they've gotten. There's a gentleman from Belmont, Jacoby Gillespie, Rodney Rice. But my question is this enough to make them as effective of a team as what we are used to seeing them be, and not the disappointing team that they were last year? You know, I believe Reese is gone, isn't he?
Or yeah. Is he gone next year? Oh, good question. Actually, I'm not sure. Let me look.
But like, Kevin Willard, I have talked about him since the day he was hired. I really like the style of coach that he is. I like what he does as a coach. So I trust that he's making, you know, good decisions for his roster, but at the same time, you don't have a crystal ball to know exactly what's going to come from those players, you know? So that, I guess, while that makes news, it still leaves a lot of question marks for me when it comes to Maryland, but they've been very, very active in and out with the portal.
And it looks like Reese is back.
Okay. So that makes it even better. He's an all to Big Ten player.
Yeah.
And you're adding, you know, you're taking three away, Kaiser Lamothe. Is that his name? And Bachelor, those three are gone, but the other three coming in, like maybe Maryland turns it around this year.
Still scratch my head over what happened this past season. I really
me too, because their roster was set up, I thought, to be a pretty competitive team, and they, we kind of knew Michigan wasn't going to be the greatest in the world, so we kind of that wasn't a surprise. But Maryland being tied for 12th with Rutgers, that was my biggest surprise, I think, for the bad in the Big Ten.
No, I completely agree. Real quick, let's switch over to women's basketball for just a moment, because there's a couple of teams that have been pretty active early on. Maryland's been very active early on. They got Kayleen Smichel to transfer from Rutgers to Maryland. She was averaging 16 points a game as a freshman in the Big Ten Conference.
That's a good ad.
Absolutely. And I believe Brenda Freeze had tweeted yesterday some gif of her dancing, that viral one of the guy, the person like coming out on the concert stage. So I think there's more to come for the Terps that maybe we don't know about yet. At least I didn't see maybe who that was pointing to, because I believe that was well after Kayleen's announcement to Maryland. Ohio State, they picked up Chance Gray, one of the talented Oregon Ducks that hit the transfer portal. They also picked up Petty from Kentucky. So Ohio State is completely reloading with Cody McMahon back as well.
That's a big thing right there, is Cody McMahon is, honestly, I wouldn't be shocked to see her be the player of the year in the conference. She's that damn good. Like she is an amazing, and this was only her sophomore year. She got better from her freshman to her sophomore. I can't imagine maybe what's, she's going to start taking over and basically running games, you know, potentially as the person to make sure she gets the shot, or at least touches the ball every possession. She's that commanding of the offensive side. I really like Cody McMahon.
Yeah, I do too. And then also Michigan State picked up a huge Grace Van Sluten, the Oregon Duck, who's averaging over 15 points, 7 rebounds a game, announced her commitment to Michigan State. That is huge, and that's going to make one of the nastiest front court pairings between her and Julia Averill this upcoming season. That's worth the price of admission itself. Besides the fact that it's one of the highest scoring offenses, that's a system they play, and they throw up a bunch of threes. Like those two playing together, they both averaged as forwards this past year, like 3 assists a game. I mean, it's the ball's going to move. This is going to be a fun offense next year.
Yeah, I'm interested to see where, you know, how. See, I'm struggling to find a place where the portal kind of does what 24/7 does. Do they have a women's side portal?
So the best, and this is an not paid for plug.
No free ads.
Yeah.
Actually, we have free ads.
TheNextHoops.com is really a good place to go.
That's where I'm at.
So Leah Goodman has done an amazing job. A hat tip to her, because she is absolutely killed it. The daughter of Jeff Goodman. Covering this transfer portal news. She's done an amazing job, and you can see a lot of her work in kind of an accumulation there on that site. But a couple of teams that are really almost depleted at this point. Curious where Penn State goes from here. Of course, Ashley Owusu got drafted in the WNBA draft. McKenna Maurice's collegiate career is over. Hitting the portal, was Allie Brigham. She's already announced her commitment to Bryant. Leilani Kapanis hit the portal from Penn State, one of the best defenders in the entire Big Ten Conference. I don't believe she's announced the school yet. And then Shea Chesky, the sharpshooter that had a 40-point game earlier this year, is in the portal as well. So Penn State
30 points in the transfer portal.
Yeah, it, like Penn State's got some restocking to do in its cabinet. And then Michigan's also interesting because Michigan has six players in the portal, including their best player, Layla Felia. She hit the portal. Don't believe she's an announced destination at this point, but she's in the portal. Cameron Williams is in the portal. Kyra Evans in the portal. Taylor Williams in the portal. Taylor Woodson announced her commitment to Minnesota. And Elise Stuck is the other one. I believe she announced her commitment to Ball State, if memory serves.
It's not on here. It's not marked on here, but I wouldn't doubt that, you're
correct. I believe I saw that yesterday.
It just might not have been updated yet.
With 1,400 players, it's might take a minute to add.
If it takes 3 days, I'm not going to be upset with that many people. Jeez Louise.
But that's some of the movement on the women's side as well, and that's going to be a lot of fun to watch.
I see Minnesota is losing three, but they've added two from Michigan and one from Nebraska in conference adds. Now, granted, they're not big point numbers, but they're not losing a lot of points either for their players that are in the portal. So Minnesota was one of those interesting teams in the women's side that they weren't expected to be much like the men's side.
Correct.
But they produced. Now, they did falter a little bit at the end and kind of fell off. But
well, and they lost their best player with an injury. I mean, right. To give them...
Right. But my point being is if they're adding pieces, that means they're reloading. They're not necessarily trying to just recruit it. They're going out and finding players that can contribute. So I'll be interested to see what Minnesota does this coming basketball season as well.
It's all so exciting. It's going to be fun to be breaking down and assessing rosters in the next few weeks for sure.
Well, you know, and here's the thing. I know that football's coming up, and I don't hate football, but I'm really looking forward to next November already.
How I am as well. But all right, before we close up shop, we have a special announcement here at the end. Sam?
Yeah, I teased it out on social media. For the aspect of we're going to have a new logo coming out. It's going to come out basically within the next couple of weeks. It'll be starting to be phased in because the next major sports season is football and we will have 18 teams in the conference. So we need to present a logo that will encapsulate that. Now, we changed the name last year to Big Talk to do that, but our logo also didn't include the four teams that are being added because at the time we didn't have four more teams to add. So now here we are, but we've got the new logo. We're keeping the same Big Talk aspect with blue collar, blue blood. But if you look in the B and the G, you have the Bruins, the Trojans, the Ducks, and the Huskies are some, there they are right there. The Huskies along with the other 14 that are already in the conference, but that is the new logo going forward for us here at Big Talk. So, we're keeping as much as we can to the old, that we've got now, because we're still Big Talk, you know, it's that part hasn't changed, but we need to throw out a new logo to welcome in our new four members, and golly, we're gonna have four more teams to talk about next year.
Crazy. So much more portal action. We should have included them in the transfer portal discussions.
Well, 24/7 Sports does have those four teams in the Big Ten portal.
It still doesn't feel real, but hey, we're embracing the new reality. We got the new logo change. Hat tip to Sam, excellent job on the creation. We're pretty excited about the logo here on Big Talk, which, by the way, where can everybody find Big Talk, Sam?
Oh, great. I'm glad you asked, Dalton. on TikTok, Instagram, and the platform formerly known as Twitter, it is at B1G_talk. That is B1G, Dalton, not B-I-G, B1G. _talk Big Talk. Facebook, it is B1G Talk Big Talk, not all Big Talk. We know the rigmarole on that one. We are Big Talk, not all Big Talk. You find us on ASAP every week, 9 a.m. Eastern on the ASAP network, every Friday at 9, streamed live. And later that day, the podcast version will be available through Lounge Media Group. And if you want to see the stream that you missed when it was live, go to Spotify, our stream is or our video is there.
Awesome. Well, that does it for another edition of Big Talk. A big thank you to all of you for tuning in and joining us for this episode. And for my partner, Sam Sprunger, I'm Dalton Shetler. So long, everybody.
JCPenney catalog is real.